lovers. Welcome to Get Real, a podcast hosted by the National Animal Interest Alliance, through which we'll have deeply honest conversations about animal research so we can learn together and make compassionate choices about our medical future together. Welcome to episode 20 of Get Real. I'm Dr. Cindy Buckmaster, your host for Get Real, and today we're going to talk about something that most of us will view as frightening, and quite frankly, a bit embarrassing. Here's the deal. Animal-loving Americans have been programmed to harm themselves and everyone they love, and they have no idea they're being manipulated. They're puppets on a string, fighting passionately for something that's actually an illusion. An illusion that was deliberately designed to exploit their kind and loving hearts for the personal gain of others. Tom Leach, an attorney and leader in research advocacy and education, joins us today to help me break it down for you on Get Real. Thank you for joining us, Tom. I appreciate you coming and sharing your expertise with us. We're going to spend a bunch of time today talking about some of the animal rights campaigns that are used against researchers who are working very hard to bring us the treatments and cures we continue to demand for ourselves and our loved ones. But before we get into that, I'd like you to talk a little bit about your expertise, because you're a super unique guest for this topic as a licensed attorney who also happens to be the executive director of several research advocacy organizations. So maybe before we get into the meat of the discussion, you can fill our listeners in on the organizations you serve and your roles and goals for those organizations.
Cindy, thanks for having me. Glad to talk about some of these issues here today. I serve as the executive director of the New Jersey Association for Biomedical Research, and then I was brought on by one of our sister organizations, the Pennsylvania Society for Biomedical Research, to also serve as the organization's executive director. So obviously, with both organizations being located geographically next to each other, it makes things a little bit easier for some collaborative efforts between those two organizations as we try to enhance biomedical research advocacy in this region of the United States. And I also serve as the president of States United for Biomedical Research, which is our national nonprofit organization comprised of our state, regional, and affiliated biomedical research advocacy organizations. The core of the mission for all three of those organizations is to educate and advocate for the biomedical research community.
Educate who?
The general public, policymakers, the state and national government, anybody who's impacted by biomedical research. And as any listener to your podcast knows, all of us are impacted by biomedical research.
That's exactly right. And I think that is an important point because, as we've discussed on several episodes as well, the general public doesn't really have an accurate understanding of how it is they get their treatments. And they don't really understand the truth about how we work with animals throughout the research spectrum, including the tail end when we're testing drugs for safety prior to putting them into human volunteers for clinical trials, right? So that we can release drugs to market. So they don't really understand that. And that misunderstanding has been generated in large part by the silence of the research community for decades, right? So organizations like the ones you mentioned are critical then for educating the public about the truth, because in the absence of the truth, then they're left with, you know, what fills that void. And what tends to fill that void is a gigantic amount of misinformation that comes from groups opposed to research with animals, like PETA, for example, who happens to be a very vocal group. And of course, in two of our previous episodes, The Roadmap to Mental Health and Dangerous Game, I highlighted some campaigns specifically generated by PETA to target two biomedical researchers who are doing incredibly important work, work that the public is demanding, right? So Dr. Murray's work is in mental health, and this is something that many of us continue to struggle with in society, and we're still trying to develop good solutions. And Dr. Murray's work has been directly related to figuring out how the brain supports normal mental health so that we can get at some of these problems in better detail. And of course, then there's Dr. Agnes LaCruz and her work with marmosets, another non-human primate, and menopause and Alzheimer's disease, which differentially affects women as they age, right? And so all of these things are critical health concerns that we have right now. But PETA has stepped in, and what they did in both cases, and this seems to be a common theme of theirs, is they used open records requests to get video footage of animals doing behavioral tests, and they are deliberately taken out of context with some messaging that is inaccurate to drive a negative emotional response from the public to support the abolition of this work. The context is distorted. The public is seeing something that's not really true, and they're hearing something that's not really true. And because most of us love animals, animals, that strikes a chord, right? So that makes animal-loving people a perfect target for being manipulated by this distorted context, for being manipulated to drive a campaign against someone who is working their whole lives to help those very same people who love animals and who love their children and their parents and their neighbors, you know, and their friends, right? Those very people are being manipulated because they love animals, specifically because they love animals, to do something that will actually harm animals and people moving forward. They don't know it. They have no idea. And that's the most heartless part of this. But in both those cases, it started with just a simple request. We want those videos. And there are these open records laws that groups like this can use to request that information. And then once it's gone, they create these campaigns that then incite people, normal animal-loving people, to harass, to protest, to yell, to send horrible emails, threatening phone calls. I mean, all of this happens all the time. And I think the video stuff is really powerful. You know, you see something, a picture's worth a thousand words, right? And if those words are mainly misinformation, well, that picture becomes really, really powerful. And I think also really, really dangerous. I mean, what do you think about that?
Well, I think you're right. When you look at macaques or marmosets, they're cute little furry animals, right? And they create an emotional response. And those animals are viewed as being similar to us in their behaviors. That's why animal rights extremists like to use those videos and images and false depictions of the way those animals are used in research because of the emotional response that it can create. These open public records laws are critical tools to ensure government accountability and transparency. And that's not what we're seeing here. We're seeing videos and images taken out of context, manipulated. You know, if you see a photo, for example, oftentimes they're made to look more sinister than they are, and editing the backgrounds to make them appear dark and scary. You can pull a snippet of a video and completely use that out of context to fit the narrative that you want to create. And that's exactly what they're doing. So I think as a research community, we need to do a better job at explaining why the research is taking place, why a particular animal is being used to complete that research, and make sure people understand that this research is being used to help treat mental illness, to help treat Alzheimer's disease, addiction, diseases that impact all of us, to counter those false narratives and false depictions from the animal rights extremists.
Right. And that is informing misinforming the opinions of the public, the media, and legislators who, you know, are very active in creating bills and restrictions to the research that we all depend on right now until there's a better way, right? So it's becoming, I think, a pretty serious and dire situation, right? And the thing about it is, you know, what you hear from the extremist groups all the times is, well, this is just about transparency. And what I think is really funny about that is that they're exploiting laws that support transparency to create false narratives. It has nothing to do with transparency so much as using transparency to drive their false narratives and campaigns in order to fulfill their own agenda, right? What was the Freedom of Information Act and all these state-level open records requests? What were they actually created for? Government accountability, right? What are they being used for?
You're exactly right. They were created to increase accountability in government and increase transparency. And I also fully support our research institutions being transparent about the role of animals in research. We need to talk about successes, our failures, and even our shortcomings. But like most things in this world, there's a balancing test that needs to be completed. As a lawyer, I recognize some of the important things that need to be protected, like trade secrets or intellectual property, security, and safety, which I think we can talk about a little bit more. There's a whole host of reasons why data should be released in a manner that's protective of everybody's interests.
Well, I think that's all true. The bottom line here, though, is it seems that we have groups that have weaponized FOIA. They're getting this information so that they can deliberately distort its context and create campaigns that are deliberately meant to incite harassment and bullying amongst the animal-loving public. And in these two cases, in the case of Dr. Betsy Murray and Dr. Agnes LaCruz, they've been quite effective, and they're not alone. There's a long list of people who are still victim to this continuous harassment. And it just continues and continues, you know, and it's been going on for years with just these two people and for years longer with others. And nothing seems to change it. The information is available because it's the taxpayer's right to know it. But the use of that information isn't monitored, controlled. No one pays any attention to what happens to it after that, right? You know, the research community, we're like sitting ducks. If you can get information from us and deliberately distort its context in order to create serious harassment and generate fear within us, why does anybody want to do research? In fact, we do have talented postdocs who are at a point in their career now where they're saying, hey, you know what? I don't think I want to do that. because there doesn't seem to be any protection for me. Now, what's interesting about that is that there was a new development just recently. PETA, in 2019, they requested some video footage from UC Davis, and they were about to give up the information, and I guess they challenged it. And in that particular case, the judge ruled against PETA. So 3 years later, April 2022, the judge ruled that he would not release these videos to PETA. And the judge said, well, releasing the videos would undermine academic freedom and the scientific process because releasing those videos would put researchers at risk of physical harm and inhibit future research. In fact, the judge said that the public was better served by not having the videos disclosed because it wouldn't really have a lot of meaning to the public to just see the videos, and determined that there was a substantial risk that releasing the videos to PETA could cause the public to misunderstand the purpose and methods of the research at UC Davis. So now here we are all these years later, and there's finally a judgment that says, hey, wait a minute, we recognize that that open records request wasn't used properly. We now have a history of examples of campaigns by PETA and others like them that support the concern for the researchers directly involved in the work for which that information was being requested. I mean, that's an interesting development, and I think it's the first time it's ever happened. Am I right?
I know there's been some cases brought over the years, and there's some ongoing cases now, but I think this is the first decision that I've seen in a very long time that puts protections in place to make sure that the researchers are not targeted by those who would like to do them harm.
This is what bothers me about it. So the answer is to just not share information, right? So that it can't be used against people. I guess I would like to see someone say, hey, you know what? If you receive information through an open records request, these are the ways you can use it. And these are the ways, more specifically, that you cannot use it. And then assign penalties for that. We know what's going to happen. We're watching it still happen to Dr. Betsy Murray and Dr. Agnes LaCruz and several others. They're going to continue to be harassed and targeted and bullied and not feel safe in their own homes or workplaces. That's happening all the time to several people. We know that's what's going to happen, right? But instead of just holding people accountable for using that information properly, and more specifically, not using it improperly, the answer is to just, well, shut off the information. And then, of course, groups like PETA and others will come back and say, well, you know, this is an attack on transparency and the taxpayers deserve to know the truth. And so then it looks like the government's just not being transparent. What do you think about that?
So I think the judge in this case ultimately got things right. When you look at the statements in the opinion as a whole, you can kind of summarize them as saying, is there a public benefit that's served by releasing this video? And in that case, I would argue that there's not. If the information that's already in the public sphere from these open public records requests is available and undisputed, what benefit do we as taxpayers have in seeing a edited version of that video where it's presented for shock value, out of context, to serve a purpose not for public transparency or for good government purposes, but to serve as a fundraising vehicle for a lot of these organizations? I liken it to the swimming pool company who submits a records request for all the homeowners in a municipality who have opened a permit to install a swimming pool, and then they use that for marketing purposes. That's what this is. This is a marketing purpose to promote PETA's radical agenda, to appeal to emotions of people throughout the United States and the world to share their funds with PETA so that they can continue to create videos like this to fundraise some more. Most of what these animal rights groups have accomplished by these efforts is to keep their fundraising cycle going. And that's not serving a public purpose. That's serving the private interests of these animal rights groups. Ultimately, their stated goal is to end all research utilizing animals. And I think we can all agree that we're not at a point in society where good science is not dependent on the role of animals. Their efforts would set back biomedical research and medical innovation far too soon from what we as a public demand and frankly deserve from our researchers and scientists.
Well, so, I mean, I do think it's interesting that the judge made this decision. This is the first time I've seen a roadblock, right? And in this particular case, PETA decided to not appeal. So they left it alone. They're not going to go after those videos at UC Davis. Now, something else very interesting just happened. Maybe a hopeful sign that the judicial system is starting to pay attention now. It seems like maybe the judicial system is starting to figure out, yeah, wait a minute, this really isn't about transparency and telling the truth to the public. This really has something more to do with PETA's personal goals. And in fact, those personal goals counter what is in the public's best interest, and by that fact, then are dangerous goals, right? In terms of what the rest of the public can expect in terms of future health discoveries, right? And so the latest thing that's happened then is PETA has a new staff scientist. Her name is Lisa Jones Engel, and she had previously been a researcher at the University of Washington and also served on their IACUC and is no longer there. And of course, nobody knows the full story on that, but it hardly matters. In this particular case, she's being very vocal about releasing the names of all of the IACUC members of this public institution. So PETA asked for that information. They wanted all the names of the current and former IACUC members. And for our listeners that don't know what an IACUC is, it stands for Institutional Animal Care and Use Committee. And this committee is the committee that is tasked with overseeing all of the animal research at the facility. So before anybody can do a study, they have to write a very detailed protocol, and everything that will ever happen to that animal in the course of that study has to be described accurately. And every bit of that has to be approved. The committee itself involves, for that reason, then certainly researchers with expertise in research, laboratory animal veterinarians, specially trained veterinarians who can understand the health needs of these animals and meet our obligations for reducing or eliminating distress in these animals during studies. And then they also are tasked with reviewing the entire program of the institution that involves research with animals, all the lab spaces, anywhere where there might be surgical procedures, occupational health, environmental health and safety, all of that, the training of people who work with animals, that gets reviewed twice a year and communicated with federal entities. And then, of course, the other really, really important role of this committee is that if there is an error, which is usually what happens when there's a noncompliance, a mistake of some kind, or in very rare exceptions, somebody just deliberately does something they shouldn't, then those issues of noncompliance are also investigated and reported by this IACUC committee to the federal government. And so this is a hugely important committee. And in almost every case, the people who serve on this committee do so on a voluntary basis. So PETA decided they wanted all the names of these people. And because it's a state institution, I think the institution at first felt compelled to release it. Information, though there had already been protests at other UW staff employees' houses. So there was already an established history of harassment by PETA. And the IACUC members, you know, were concerned. I mean, who wants to serve on an IACUC if what you can expect from that is this harassment and bullying, you know, of the nature that we've seen in Dr. Betsy Murray's case and Dr. Agnes LaCruz's case and countless others. So the chair of the IACUC and some others sued the university and said, you know, we don't want you to release our names. There isn't any reason for you to release our names. And then the judge said, yeah, all right, we're going to put a temporary injunction in place and not release those names. Maybe you can explain, like, what does that even mean? Like, what is a temporary injunction and how long will this play out like this?
Before I answer your question, Cindy, I think an important fact of all of this for your listeners to realize is that the IACUC includes a community member who's otherwise unaffiliated with the university or the research institution, and they serve a critical role in bringing outside views into the process of reviewing a research protocol and how the animal is going to be used in that protocol. So in this case, PETA was not trying to just get the names of University of Washington employees. They're trying to get the names and contact information of private citizens who are serving as unaffiliated members of the university IACUC. That's scary to me. And I think the reasons are clear that it's to harass and intimidate those people. And if we can't get members to serve on an IACUC, the research isn't going to be able to take place. So they're very strategic in seeking this information for reasons that I think are completely inappropriate and fly in the face of the safety and well-being that we would all want for ourselves and our loved ones.
Yeah, I mean, it's a great point. And there's reason to believe that this is exactly what they will do with that information, right? There were also several threatening emails, letters, and voice messages to the university health researchers saying things like, you people who work with animals are, quote, vile, expletive humans, end quote, right? And another quote, I'm going to do whatever is necessary to stop animal research. That sounds very threatening and menacing and concerning. And I don't think any reasonable person would want their names released to a population of people who have been cited by groups like this to say such angry, hostile things that certainly feel very threatening. I mean, it's violence, whether it's physical violence or not. Those are violent comments, right?
They're violence and they're inciting fear is the goal. Letting IACUC members know, we know where you live, we know your name, and we are going to harass you. Can you imagine if you come home and then taking your kids to after school activities and you come home and there's a mob of angry people yelling at you, yelling at your children, telling your children you're a horrible person and other things? That's not something that we should be supporting as a society. There's a time and place for protests, and outside of someone's home or using tools that may be available to find out where someone lives so that you can target harassment is not something that we should be striving for as a civilized society.
Right. It doesn't create social change. It creates fear so that people can't continue to do their jobs for the greater benefit of society. I mean, it's a completely distorted representation of even what protests were designed for, because the winner in these cases are always the extreme animal rights groups and their bank accounts. And the public pays the price in more ways than one. They pay it certainly out of their wallets and their own bank accounts to support these groups because they're being manipulated into believing they're doing something that is noble. And nobody is telling them how dangerous these actions are for them personally, right? And then, you know, they're being manipulated also in their minds and their hearts about what is and isn't true about animals and how they are a part of this work and how we feel about them and how we actually care about them and how important they truly are for their continued future health, right? So, I mean, it's all so lopsided, really.
Just think about how many times we've heard a quality researcher leaving the field because of the potential of harassment. Not just the individuals are put at risk, but as a society, we lose out on somebody who may get out of the field, who may have found that breakthrough discovery related to cancer or some other disease. We need to do whatever we can to encourage people to study biomedical research, not making barriers so that we drive them in a different direction.
Well, that's right. You know, there are prominent researchers who've now just have left the U.S. completely because of this climate. That's the other thing. I mean, the oversight and the regulatory expectations are not the same, you know, across all the various countries, right? So there's all of that as well. I mean, this is the result of that. So you have all these fine people out there who think they're doing something wonderful for animals who have no idea that this is what they're actually doing, harming themselves and everyone they love inadvertently because they've been directly manipulated by a group that is concerned more about an extreme agenda, which isn't realistic. And the media, of course, just keeps amplifying all of this. And it just spreads the misinformation far and wide. And the legislators are reading this stuff. And now they are also, I think in many cases, very misinformed. And because of their influence, this becomes an even more critically dangerous situation for us to be in, right? I mean, the truth of the matter is this. This is a consumer-driven product. The general populace of the world wants medical treatments, plain and simple. And the other truth is that if you want that still, animals, at least for now, are still necessary for you to have it, period. And so people are going to continue to ask for it. They're going to continue to demand it. They're going to continue to want it. And someone's going to do it, whether it's here or elsewhere. I mean, it's as simple as that. It's not just going to stop because these groups want it to stop. There was a press release by AMP and Neighbor, and the Neighbor representative made a statement that I think is really important to IACUC members and researchers who work with animal models are as deeply committed to animal care as they are to advancing life-saving research. Neighbor supports the exemption of personal identifying information and open records laws precisely because of such targeting. Instead of painting a target on the backs of IACUC members and researchers, we should support their efforts to improve the lives of both humans and animals alike. That's the bottom line. And yet their actions completely contradict that. And that's the danger in all of this. And the discussion continues. Jim Newman from AMP put out an opinion piece in The Scientist. And I'm going to include all of these references in the episode response page for this episode so the listeners can read into more of the details. But he wrote an opinion that sort of describes everything we just discussed. And then immediately Lisa Jones Engel wrote a response to that piece, which had several inaccuracies in it. And again, the public is prone to believe these things because they don't know any better. And I will provide clarifications for those inaccuracies also on that episode response page.
So the judge in the University of Washington case, as I understand it, granted a preliminary injunction preventing the university from releasing the names and information about those IACUC members. And it's a complicated process, but a party needs to show that they will suffer irreparable harm from the release of that information to get a preliminary injunction granted.
It's the first time we've seen, you know, a real sort of break on all of this. This is dangerous. And finally, people are saying, okay, no, stop, right? In fact, this judge, Judge Richard Jones, he said that he believed that if released, these details could be used to threaten IACUC members. For the judge to do that, it had to be very clear, right? This isn't just someone's imagination. And I mention this because one of the things that Lisa Jones Engel in her response to Jim Newman's opinion said was that, well, you know, there's no reason to think that PETA would do that. I mean, I can't imagine why she would say such a thing when we, you know, we know very clearly they publish all the time their very clear harassment of people on a regular basis. And it's one of the mechanisms they use to garner further financial support, right? So I'm not sure where that came from. But Judge Jones also said that this harassment and menacing actions by groups like PETA cost IACUC members their First Amendment rights. Because the IACUC then can't speak without fear of repercussion, which, quote, unquestionably constitutes irreparable injury, end quote. What do you think of that? I mean, that's a very interesting statement. He's actually protecting the First Amendment rights of the IACUC itself by making this decision, ordering this preliminary injunction.
I think that was the right decision. And just like most laws, it's balancing competing interests. And in this case, weighed in the side of protecting the right of the IACUC members, if their right to do the work that they need to do is threatened, as a society, we all lose.
Yeah, you know, one of the things about the First Amendment, I think that trips people up is, what is the line between freedom of speech and harassment? I mean, there is one. There has to be, right? You can't just say whatever you want to somebody and harass and bully them. I mean, it's confusing because that's exactly what's happening to Dr. Murray and Dr. LaCruz, right? They're just saying whatever they want, sending them threatening emails, leaving them threatening voicemails, hanging leaflets with inaccurate, damning information on the doors of all their neighbors, putting up posters, taking out, you know, newspaper ads, which again are based on false information in order to incite people and invoke emotion in a manipulative way based on distorted representations of fact. But that seems to be okay. I mean, what is the line? What can't you do?
Sure. I think there's three key points that any person should consider when looking to see if someone is being harassed in a way that would violate freedom of speech. The first is if the statement constitutes incitement, meaning that there's a risk of serious injury or harm, then that person's speech can be limited. The second is if the person is using fighting words, meaning that if somebody tries to provoke somebody using language that would cause that person to respond aggressively. And I would argue that many of the examples of the animal rights community harassing the folks in our biomedical research community fall into this category. Yelling, threatening things at researchers and their loved ones. They're there to provoke. They're there to get that response. And if I'm coming home with my children and someone is calling me, make up any name you want and telling my children things about me that are untrue, there's a good chance I'm going to be angry and confront those people. And that's exactly what they want. So your right to free speech can be limited in that case for the protection of everyone involved. And I think the final is an actual threat where the speaker communicates in a way that's a threat to the safety of the recipient of that threat. We've also seen that there's real-world examples of researchers' cars being firebombed, receiving bloody razor blades in the mail, threatening voicemails, damage to their property, notes left outside of your door. Those are not actions that are protected by free speech. Those are actions designed to intimidate and threaten the recipient, in this case, the biomedical researchers who continue to develop the cures that we all want to see.
Yeah, but there seems to have been, over these past several decades, a hesitation to actually challenge the First Amendment rights of these people, right? So another example of the judicial system maybe stepping up now and becoming more of a force against this kind of intimidation and harassment. Just recently, a gentleman from West Virginia, 57-year-old man, he had been using an anonymous email account to send directly threatening emails to Dr. Fauci of the National Institute of Allergy and Infectious Disease at the NIH. And he also threatened Dr. Collins, who had been the previous director of NIH, and another administrator who was a member of the Health and Human Services, right? And a couple of other folks as well. And so he was sending these very threatening emails, and he was threatening to hurt or kill Dr. Fauci and members of his family. And there was one in particular where he said that Dr. Fauci and his family would be, quote, dragged into the street, beaten to death, and set on fire. This was a very direct threat to him. And the end result is they tracked down this anonymous email. They found this person, and he's now been sentenced to over 3 years in prison. Certainly, all of those things have happened to the researchers that I know that we've spoken to on this show, and they were not afforded any of that protection. And now I'm going to share something very, very personal with you to further highlight my point. Probably about 5 years ago or so, I was asked to comment in an article done by a reporter with the USA Today about why dogs were important in cardiovascular studies. And so I spent a good deal of time reviewing the actual protocol information so that I could give this person, I probably spent 4 days, right? I really wanted to give this person the real details so that she could share this with the public, because the public was really struggling with this. We all love dogs, and they wanted to really know, why are dogs so necessary for this? And there's a very good reason for it. Our hearts are very similar in all kinds of ways. And so they're very good models for cardiovascular studies. Anyway, I provided her with all of that information. She didn't really write any of that information, unfortunately. She interviewed another extreme animal rights group too, and presented their false narrative first, and then mentioned a few things about me. And then within a day or so, certainly that same week, on my work email account, I received the following note. And I'm going to read it word for word. So parents, if you have children listening, be advised that there is some very vulgar language. Quote, "You are a disgrace. How do you think killing thousands of dogs is going to help medical research, you stupid bitch? Let me see you in person so I can torture you like you torture those dogs. I want to shoot you with a shotgun right between the eyes, you bitch. You better watch your back, bitch. You must be heartless, you bitch. No love for animals. I hope you die tomorrow in a horrific death and suffer like those dogs. Don't let me find out where you live, because I will hunt you down, bitch. I want to use you in medical research and torture you, you ugly old stupid bitch. I hope you rot in hell. Again, watch your back, because you never know what's around the corner. Fuck you, bitch," with about 10 exclamation points. This is all caps now. "I so want to put you in a cage and fuck you up, bitch. Remember, karma is a bitch, and all things bad will come back around to bad people, you heartless fuck. Again, fuck you. I hope one of those dogs bites you right in the face. Please die. Thank you and have a horrific life. What's left of it, because you look old as fuck. Hope you die ASAP. Karma is a bitch." I would say that that note constitutes an exception to the freedom of speech by all three of those limitations you just expressed. But yet, when I contacted the FBI about it, they blew me off. So I don't know, maybe I'm just not important enough. I'm not Anthony Fauci. I'm not Francis Collins. I mean, I don't know. I mean, it just seems to be this very uneven application of the laws. And I think this is part of the reason that our research community continues to suffer from these campaigns. And in a way, this kind of inconsistent behavior provides a permission slip to extremist groups like this to continue to target hardworking people who are trying to do good for society. And that reminds me now of an article that you wrote that I wanted you to talk about just a little bit, because it's all related. There's a new bill in New Jersey, and I'm going to let you talk about it. And I want you to talk about why it was proposed and for whom. And then I want you to talk about the opinion article you wrote in response to that, if you don't mind.
Sure. First, let me just say, I am so sorry that you had to deal with comments like that. I'm glad that you're continuing to conduct the advocacy you are doing on behalf of the research community, despite threats like that that you've received. And I'm sure that's not the only one that you've received over the years. So thank you for doing what you continue to do for all of us.
Well, thank you for saying that, Tom. And you're right. It's not the only one. I just got another one a couple days ago. I think to myself, if someone is trying that hard to shut me up, it's because I'm sharing facts and truth in a way that people are listening to, right? I mean, I don't have a personal agenda here except to ensure that the public has the actual facts. And that's because I love people and also because I love animals. I want this ship to right itself and move in the right direction, in a loving direction. And this us and them stuff is harmful to everyone. But thank you for those comments. I appreciate it. So again, let's talk about that bill and the opinion article you wrote, because I think it folds right into this inconsistent application of protections for people, depending on who they are.
So earlier this year, a piece of legislation was introduced by a new senator here in the New Jersey legislature. It's Senate Bill 2964, which would establish a criminal offense for the targeted picketing of an individual's residence, and it would also prohibit the release of addresses of individuals. It's clearly driven by the protests earlier this spring by those targeting U.S. Supreme Court justices and the Dobbs decision. And putting aside anybody's views about the abortion issue and the decision that came from the Supreme Court, I think the senator who introduced this bill was dead on in his assessment of protecting individuals within their homes. when you stand right outside that person's home and target them, it would be a criminal offense based on this legislation. And factors that are at play in this bill have already been upheld as reasonable time and place restrictions on somebody's First Amendment rights to protest.
Meaning that it's not a violation of their First Amendment rights if you tell them you cannot stand outside someone's home and personally target them with harassment.
Correct. There's been, in many jurisdictions, restrictions similar to what this bill would do that have been held up by the courts. Or even some of them are within court opinions themselves. They've been held up with reasonable safety zones around women's health clinics, for example.
So why do we need a bill then?
Because there's nothing that specifically would make it a direct violation. You know, there's court decisions that upheld these restrictions. But when you put it in statute that says you cannot do this, the law is very clear. Somebody who's violating that law can be charged with criminal offense.
I see. Well, that's fascinating. That's exactly what we need. We need something like that that's federal to protect people. You know, I remember a very sad story that a neurobiologist, a very good neurobiologist, left the field because his children were terrified because these people were constantly outside his home saying these awful things. And, you know, they couldn't sleep because these children were terrified that these people were going to come in there and, you know, and they would threaten things about their children too. And so he just left the field. This kind of stuff's been going on for a long time. And a part of me, the cynical part of me is like, well, geez, if it wasn't Supreme Court justices, I mean, I feel like because they were Supreme Court justices, someone decided to finally make this a violation. And this touches on what you wrote in your article. And I will, of course, include this as well in the episode response page so our listeners can read it for themselves.
They are public officials who made a conscious decision to be in society in a way that puts the spotlight on them. They are agreeing to a certain amount of increased attention being put on themselves and the decisions they make. With the case of researchers, they are still private people who are just going about their jobs, trying to find cures to disease and research basic biologic functions and try to better society. You know, if people put aside their views on what inspired this legislation, I think we would all agree that this is something we would want for ourselves and our loved ones. And I think we should all agree that threatening somebody and trying to instill fear because you disagree with the career choice that person made is not a benefit to society.
Well, especially not in this case, since it's something that the whole of society relies on. They can pretend, if they like, to separate themselves and their own accountability from the fact that animals are necessary for them to have all of these health advances. But the fact of the matter is, they are. And every medical advance that they have currently had its foundation in research with animals as well. That's just a fact. Pretending that it's not true may make you feel better about yourself, but it does nothing for the people who are benefiting from this work or the animals that are involved in this work. There is a solution. We come together as a peaceful society with the real accurate facts and create comprehensive plans together to continue to move us in that direction of stronger science, faster cures, and fewer animals, right? You know, incorporating some of the MPS stuff, for example, that we talked in the last episode. We need to have a real comprehensive plan. All of this fighting and this us and them is getting us nowhere. I really think the public needs to start thinking about that before they write their next check to one of these groups. Who are you really supporting here? And are you supporting solutions or are you supporting an agenda? I think that's an important thing for folks to consider in light of everything we've discussed today. Do you have any final words you want to share with our listeners before we close the episode?
When you look at everything we've talked about today, I hope your audience realizes that all of this is a balancing act, trying to balance the right of government and government accountability and transparency in government with the rights of all of us as private citizens to privacy, to security in our homes and safety. And that's at the heart of what this legislation here in New Jersey does and at the heart of what all of us as a society should want for ourselves and our loved ones. We want to learn what government is doing, but we also want to come home and unwind at the end of the day and not worry about who's outside our door and who may be firebombing our car. You know, obviously that's an extreme example, but someone knocking on your door at 1 a.m. can be just as frightening when your young child hears it and has no idea what's going on. So there's all degrees of concern involved here, and it differs for everybody. So let's just take it out of our homes. Let's find the right time and the place to protest if something you disagree with. And let's let all of us feel safe when we come home at night.
Well, thank you very much, Tom Leach, for your expertise and your time. I appreciate everything you continue to do for biomedical research and for the public and for laboratory animals. So you see, we're being exploited, misled, and victimized by a movement that is blind to reality. And I think it's clear at this point that they won't stop until our legislators stop engaging these people for political gain and start defending the Americans they took an oath to protect. Up next, was the Envigo Inotiv dog breeding facility in Cumberland, Virginia, truly the house of horrors the media has made it out to be? Or is there more to this story? Find out on the next episode of Get Real. I'm Dr. Cindy Buckmaster, your host for Get Real, and I hope our discussion today has given you some food for thought. Don't forget to visit our episode response page for the resources I promised you. You'll find the link in the lower right-hand corner of our website at getrealpodcast.info. And please visit our support link and make a small monthly donation to help us keep rolling. We still have so much to talk about, and I appreciate your engagement. We'll talk soon.